You're listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast, a series of conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center here in Beijing. I'm Paul Hanley, the director of the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, and I'll be your host. I'm talking to you today from the School of International Studies at Peking University, and I'm joined by my friend Dr. Wang Dong, associate professor at the School of International Studies and director of the Center for Northeast Asian Strategic Studies. Wang Dong, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul, for inviting me.
We'd like to talk to you today to get your insights on recent developments on North Korea and what you think they might mean for China. Mm-hmm. I'd like to start by asking you for your sense of where the China-North Korea relationship stands today, 1 year into President Xi Jinping and the new leadership's tenure mm-hmm. in office. We have seen notable changes and developments in relations in the past year. I'd be interested in your perspectives mm-hmm. on that. Mm-hmm. And how would you characterize relations between China and North Korea today?
Okay. Thank you. I think since the new leadership came into power, I think there is also a notable change in terms of Chinese approach toward its relations with DPRK. And particularly, I think what I always want to emphasize to my friends and colleagues is the fact that I think the Chinese leaders now have become increasingly mm-hmm. Understood that without denuclearization, there will be no mm-hmm. durable stability. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I believe that China has this twin goal of wanting to having both stability and denuclearization. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. oftentimes, I think there are kind of misunderstanding, misperception. I think mm-hmm. Elsewhere, people will tend to believe that China sort of value stability mm-hmm. over denuclearization, or wanted to get stability at the expense of denuclearization. I think that is really a misperception of what mm-hmm. the Chinese real intention and goal mm-hmm. When it comes to the North Korea nuclear issue.
So there has been some talk about this that I'm aware of, that denuclearization has turned, sort of moved up in terms of the priority of the Chinese mm-hmm. leadership. Mm-hmm. And you see this, I think you can look at the statements that are made yeah. by Chinese leaders and you can detect some of this.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sense, however, from a policy standpoint or mm-hmm. from a Chinese behavior or how China's responding to certain things that North Korea does, how sure. can foreign observers see in a concrete way
yeah.
that this has changed and yeah. that denuclearization yeah. is now yeah. more important?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. First of all, I fully agree with your observation. This is also my personal mm-hmm. Observation and conviction as well. Let me give you, I think, a few very concrete examples or evidence, if you like. I think first is that I think China actually, along with United States, work out this most recent round of sanction regime yeah. Through the UN Security Council. So this is one first, example you want to cite.
This is the aftermath.
Yeah, in the aftermath of the third nuclear test.
Their nuclear.
So China, I think, has been quite strict in terms of implementing the sanction. And you may also remember last year, the Ministry of Commerce publish a list of items that are supposed to on the sanction list, and that's a lot of observers I think mm-hmm. Pay a lot of attention to that because this is quite something extraordinary. It's mm-hmm. actually unprecedented, yeah. never happened before, yeah. and I would take this as a very positive indication of that mm-hmm. China is essentially is making a public statement to mm-hmm. the international community that we are quite serious about this. Of course. Yeah. At the same time, also sending a very strong message, to North Korea that you better to because we are very serious about this.
Sure.
So I think as you also mentioned yeah. that there are serious, very important public statements, including I think once with the North Korea visitors, high level mm-hmm. visitors. I think the.
While they were in Beijing?
Yes, while yeah. they were in mm-hmm. Beijing. I think the General Chui Longhai, right? Mm-hmm. I think so the North Korea leader, Kim Jong-un, sent him mm-hmm. To Beijing. And in the meeting, during the meeting between President Xi Jinping and General Chen Ronghai, basically President Xi also put it very clearly, you know, the priorities. Mm-hmm. Number one is denuclearization, and number two, peace and stability. Number three is try to resolve this issue through diplomatic means.
Right.
So, and you see that very consistent, you know, mm-hmm. Foreign Minister Wang Yi and many other Chinese mm-hmm. leaders are making that, you know, same kind of statement. So what I see is a real consensus among the highest leadership in China regarding the priorities and preferences of China.
Is this a shift? This is a shift in view because of the new leadership, or is it because of North Korean actions, or is it because of both?
I would say, you know, certainly the leadership also matters, you know.
Yeah.
For political scientists, we, you know, study political science, we do know that leadership matters, and leaders' personalities, perceptions, beliefs, these are all variables that matter when we try to explain policy changes.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, I would not argue this is a sort of fundamental shift or change. Rather, I would like to call it a recalibration of China's policy toward North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And I always want to emphasize there's, you know, also a lot of continuity, of course, you know, understandably, in terms of China's policy toward North Korea, because of the long history we had with North Korea. And also, I think the North Korea's action, its own behavior, of course, was one of the most important factors, I think, in if we try to explain the recalibration in China's policy toward North Korea, and of course the North Korea's very provocative and irresponsible action of carrying out the third nuclear test is one of the most important reasons, you know, that really, I think, pushed prompted the Chinese new leaders to take a very tough actions. And in fact, that happened sort of during the leadership transition as well.
Exactly.
So we do see. So that's precisely my argument. There's a lot of consensus continuities between, you know, the previous leadership and the current leadership. So we should not see this as a sort of a sudden, you know, complete 180% degree sort of shift or reversal policy. No, I think it's just China has made its commitment about denuclearization very clear. So so I strongly believe that China and the United States, we do have a shared interest on those issues, and this is something I think very important to keep in mind, because sometimes people forget about that.
Right. One additional question on this issue is this issue of Chinese public opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I go onto Weibo or I go onto the social media sites, it's very clear to me that this particular generation of Chinese are looking at this relationship with North Korea much different than previous generations. And you see a lot of criticism towards North Korea and towards the previous, you know, the policy we've seen out of China of this unconditional support to North Korea. You see a lot of discussion about this on Weibo. What kind of impact is that having? Changing public opinion, the discussions that are taking place among netizens on Weibo. How much of an impact is that having on the leadership and on the way China approaches this issue?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is a very important question, and also I think a question of a lot of you know, theoretical implications as well. You know, of course, also real policy implications. And from a scholarly point of view, this is actually one of the questions we have been asking, I think, for quite some time. Scholars, people are trying to, you know, understand to what extent the public opinion really has an effect on the Chinese foreign policy making.
Yeah.
And I think, generally speaking, I think my answer to that question is that as time, you know, increasingly public opinion has increasingly more important effect.
Yeah.
The role it plays sometimes tend to be complicated. So depending on, you know, the real setting, the background, mm-hmm. context, the real issue at discussion. But generally speaking, I think now increasingly more and more policymakers, they would have to take into account mm-hmm. the public opinion. So yeah. I'm sure that if you talk to a lot of foreign ministry officials, they will tell you that yeah. you know they always worry about or you know really care a lot about the public opinions expressed mm-hmm. On the cyberspace, on the mm-hmm. internet, including the netizens. You know, mm-hmm. so what I detect myself observe also a very significant shift in Chinese public's perception and opinion toward North Korea's nuclear issue, especially after the third nuclear test.
Yeah.
And this is also part of the reason why I believe there is a real recalibration of China's policy toward North Korea. And in fact, that there are quite a number of public polling data out there. And one of the I think the polls conducted by one of the leading polling companies in mm-hmm. in China, and right after the third nuclear test, mm-hmm. and it's a nationwide polling survey, and it finds out that actually among the surveyed Chinese public, I think about 32.3% of the Chinese public, they have an extremely strong view of this issue, and they would even agree that you know whatever it takes yeah. to including use of military means if needed to sort of you know force North Korea to give up nuclear weapons, and certainly because the public really understand the stake, you yeah. know, yeah. There and the potential. Sort of fall up from a failure in the test, yeah. You know. Is
this was a nationwide.
Nationwide, people just concerned and worry about that, yeah. and when people look at the sort of irresponsible behavior, you know, particularly in terms of the North Korea's pursuit of nuclear weapons, right. that right. people get very angry about that.
And I also understand that Chinese citizens in the northeast part of China.
Yeah.
Close to the North Korean border were very concerned and very upset because the nuclear test was done close to the Chinese border.
Yeah.
And many
yeah.
citizens were worried about radioactive yeah. fallout and yeah. how they would be affected.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that that also has an impact on public opinion, especially in that
absolutely.
Part of China.
Absolutely.
Let's look at North Korea and talk a little bit about developments within North Korea.
Sure.
Last December, we saw the purge and the execution of Jang Song-taek, mm-hmm. who was the uncle of Kim Jong-un and the mm-hmm. brother-in-law of Kim Jong-il. Took many by surprise, I think, including China, mm-hmm. And still remains a mystery to many. Mm-hmm. Jang Song-taek was widely considered an advocate of economic reform in North mm-hmm. Korea and mm-hmm. was in charge of North Korea's economic relations with China. Within the allegations against Jang, some included selling North Korean assets to at a reduced price to a foreign country. Mm-hmm. And many believe that this reference to a foreign country was China. Mm-hmm. What's your interpretation of the purge of Jang Song-taek? Was this a power struggle between Jang and Kim Jong-un? Or was this an ideological struggle between pro and anti-reform mm-hmm. elements?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is also, I think, one of the most discussed issue and after the incidents, the purge and the execution of Jang Song-taek. Well, personally, because I have also done some research and I talked to many scholars, I think, including the United States and China and South Korea as mm-hmm. well. And I believe this is more of a case of a power struggle between Jang Song-taek and Kim Jong-un instead of representing an ideological struggle, you know, between the pro or anti-reform camps. And why is that? Because I think if you look at the in terms of the public statements, they have to cover this up because if they want to put up an accusation against Jang Song-taek, you have to find from what he has been doing, you know, mm-hmm. the wrongdoings, and then well, naturally China will come up, you know, of that process. But I don't think the new leader, new Korean, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un himself would be against the reform, because it's very clear, since he assumed power, he has been doing a lot of the, you know, we can call it baby steps of reform measures, and, you know, for some back and forth, and there are different interpretations among scholars regarding, you know, whether this represents a real reform initiative or is just a way to muddle through, you know. Right. But I tend to believe that Kim Jong-un, he really wants reform, and, mm-hmm. and of course North Korea, they don't use this term reform.
Right.
But that's why, you know, he always put up this, including this so-called parallel strategy, right? Beijing strategy, mm-hmm. try to have economic construction and pursue of nuclear weapons. Mm. And that's sort of into their mm-hmm. Statements and the party resolutions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we know it's economic development is always very important, because I think, you know, at the bottom, I mean, at the end of the day, I think North Korean leaders also understand that the legitimacy of their regime also comes from, you know, provide a decent life, mm-hmm. living, you know, standard to their own people. And
you think economic reform is part of Kim Jong-un's plan?
Yeah. It's just, you know, way before the incident of Chansung Tak, we have seen that Kim Jong-un has been doing this. But because, of course, he's also constrained by a variety of different factors, mm. domestic factors, international factors, and he has to consolidate his power. And so he has to play tough, you know, against international pressures and et cetera. Yeah.
So let me ask you then about sort of that vision of an economic reform. I know Chinese leadership for some time has been encouraging North Korea mm-hmm. to consider an economic reform and opening up. And I remember on a trip that Kim Jong-il took to China by train, of course, because he never flew, mm-hmm. The Chinese leadership sent him first to Dalian mm-hmm. and then to Shanghai. And my understanding is this was fairly deliberate to say, you know, look at these Chinese cities that benefited from China's own economic mm-hmm. reform and mm-hmm. opening up mm-hmm. To kind of, you know, demonstrate to North Korean leader that this mm-hmm. these benefits could be available to North Korea. Mm-hmm. It hasn't, at least in my view, had a huge impact, positive impact on North Korea. I mean, you know, do you think North Korean leadership sees it in their own interest to do economic reform that would require some opening up to the outside world? Or do they see that as a potential threat to the longevity and the stability of the regime?
Well, you know, it's always difficult to know what's really in the minds of North Korean leaders. But but if we can speculate, I think I would argue that, you know, North Korean leaders, they do want reform, because they know that's how you can have economic development. But also, I think opening up is a integral part of that. And you cannot have economic reform without opening up. So after Kim Jong-un came into power, there has been a new development in terms of joint developer zones, you know, between China and North Korea. And I think you're right. This has been, you know, if you wanna look back, has been going for actually years and decades.
Right.
China tried to influence North Korea's behavior by through, you know, demonstration, you know, through try to persuade North Korea that, you know, this is how you get your economy developed and how you get prosperity and improve the life living standards of your people. And this is something actually I would label as I call it a peaceful development strategy. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, the Chinese leaders, we have not yet publicly put up such a label.
Yes.
But from a scholarly point of view, I think this is essentially what China has been doing for decades,
right.
Trying to, you know, guide or persuade, convince North Korea to follow the footsteps of China's reform and opening up. And essentially, I think my guess is that, you know, the Chinese leaders' approach toward the resolving of the denuclearization of the nuclear issue is that you know, unless you can convince North Korea to start reforming and opening up and taking part in the globalization process. Mm-hmm. And that process will be actually irreversible. You know, as soon as you get hooked into this globalization process, there's no way you can, you know, no way to coming back. But we have to think, I think, in a sort of broader strategic, you know, context. We have to, in a more, sometimes I think, you know, realistic way, pragmatic way to how to approach this issue, because you cannot just assume that, you know, putting up pressure or threatening use force can force North Korea to change its behavior. I think the United States has been doing this for years and didn't work. So of course, you know, I also understand there has been accusation against so-called China enabling North Korea to pursue nuclear weapons, but I really think that's a really misplaced criticism, because all China want to do is just find out a much less costly way to resolve this issue, because we understand that anything goes wrong, you know, there will be a real military conflict and hundreds of thousands of people will lose their life. And that's is extreme, you know, it's just prohibitively costly path we do not want to go down. If anything, if possible, we want to choose a peaceful development strategy.
Thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate you sharing your insights, which are always extremely valuable and important. So thank you very much. That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our website at www.carnegietsinghua.org and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time. Thank you.
Thank you.